This is the second chapter of Nehemiah. I hope that maybe we begin to get a bit of a picture of just who Nehemiah is. He's likable, I think, trustworthy, and I think he's thorough. The king holds him in very high regard, and rightly so, because he seems to be the sort of person you do want as your right-hand man. He's a godly man, and that godliness seems to be visible to others. He has a really strong relationship with God. In fact, it seems to me it's almost a little bit more like a New Testament relationship than some of the Old Testament relationships that we're used to seeing. We know that he's a man of prayer, but then we also realize that he's a man who will resort to prayer on the spur of the moment. When the king talks to him, he immediately, in his heart, prays. In verses 4 and 5, the king said to me, "What is it that you want?" And the Bible then tells us, "Then I prayed to the God of heaven, and I answered the king." So in that moment between the king asking and him answering, he prays. I think that's a tremendous example. But it also tells us something about the relationship between him and God. We read further on in the chapter, we find that he talks of God in a very personal way, because this book is written by him, and he calls God my God. He does it twice in this chapter. He says, "My God." And I love that sense of a relationship, a sense of him being at one with the mighty Creator. It's not a distant relationship, it's a real one-to-one. And he had a great relationship with the king as well. This mighty emperor seems to have taken a real interest in the things that Nehemiah was interested in. Nehemiah, in a way, takes a risk by going into court looking sad. That's not normally acceptable, and I think we read more about that in Esther. But Artaxerxes actually asks after his well-being. So there's obviously a great relationship there. He listens to his concerns. And actually, I love the way that it mentions that that the queen is there when Artaxerxes asks him how long he's going to be. There's sort of a sense of like, I hope he's not going to be too long doing this. You know, we need him here. So there's a really sound relationship between him and this mighty king. And so, consequently, the king issues letters of introduction, so Nehemiah is the king's authorization, and he has safe conduct. And they're obviously really concerned for his well-being, aren't they? Because we read in verse 9 that he sends army officers, it's not just one, it's plural, and cavalry. No messing. They were making sure that their lovely servant was going to be properly looked after while he was away. They wanted him back, I think. But at the same time, he has lots of interesting character traits, Nehemiah. He was cautious, wasn't he? He wasn't just rushing in. You know, he's a man of action, but he's quite cautious. So having been quite bold in dealing with the king, Nehemiah doesn't tell everybody what he's there to do right from the start. He's also careful when he goes out to survey the city walls and make absolutely sure he knows what's going on. He does that at night, and the only horse he takes is the one he rides on. I guess everybody else has to walk. I guess to a certain extent that might be partly because of his concerns about Sanballat and Tobiah, because we read that they were very much disturbed that someone come to promote the welfare of the Israelites. That's in verse 10. But I think it was his nature to take a measured pace and to be sure that he's absolutely certain about the facts before he took the next step. He wanted to act on the information he had, check that it was absolutely correct, and then talk to the Jews about what he was proposing to do. So he had a sense of caution and organization. And then, of course, he had vision. He had a vision for what should happen, as we heard from the previous chapter last week. And he needed to share that vision. He had to do it in such a way that other people would be on board with him. He already knows what he wants to do because, you know, he feels he has the heart of God there, but he's got to convey it to other people. And he doesn't make it complicated. He's persuasive. He's personable. He includes himself within the action that needs to be taken. He says, let us rebuild the wall. He says, you see the trouble that we are in. He is part of this. And he says, we will no longer be in disgrace. He is part of this. He's not, you know, come in as a stranger and saying, you need to do this. He's got a really good way of bringing this. And so the people replied, let us start rebuilding. And so they began this good work. It's a very simple little sentence in verse 18. So they began this good work. So it's all very tempting for us to think of Nehemiah as being a very special person. And of course, in a way, that's true. He is very special. You know, he did an amazing work. But actually, more than anything, he was the right person in the right place at the time that God had ordained. And probably most important of all, he was willing. You know, he was willing to participate with God in what needed to be done. And we're all potentially as special as Nehemiah. Every single one of us is in right places at right times. We all have our own God-given and natural gifts. And like him, some of his gifts were probably quite hidden. He maybe didn't discover some of them until he actually reached Jerusalem. And indeed, some of them might be perceived by other people as weaknesses. In fact, we might think of them as weaknesses. I mean, his cautiousness to some people could be seen as a weakness. You know, people who are cautious, sometimes you think that they're just prevaricating. And other times you think, well, maybe they lack trust. They're not willing to get on with it. We can think of that sort of level of caution as being something that's weak, but actually, in this particular case, this was part of Nehemiah's wisdom. That character trait was part of his wisdom. And God had given him that. God had made him that way. So we've got to be careful not to write ourselves off when we look at our own character traits. Character traits which at times may indeed be false, you know, but at other times those same character traits can be the very things that God will use. You know that there's a sense in sometimes a shy person will think to themselves, well, you know, I can't do some of the things that people who haven't got that same shyness that I have can. But actually, they're the very people that are probably very good at being very unthreatening. And I think, you know, we all have our place in God's plan. In God's hands, all of our being can be used to take his kingdom forward, to build the church, in whatever way that should be. But to make this work, we do need, like Nehemiah, to be prayerful and willing. There needs to be a lot of accepting that God can actually use each of us. Sometimes we just look at ourselves and think, well, I don't see how God can use me, you know, because I'm not the person that I want to be. But actually, the smallest, humblest contribution may, in God's way of working, be his greatest work. So the question is, do you really value yourself? At times, we don't, do we? But it's really important that under God, we recognize our own value. Do I recognize that God will use me just as I am, faults and all? Yeah, he will. But it's so easy for me to look at myself and just to despair at the things that I see as being wrong with my life, my character, my lack of skills in some things, and to think that God can't use me until I'm different. I think, well, you know, once I've sorted this bit of my life out, then God will be able to use me. But he doesn't wait for us to become perfect, thankfully. You know, he just wants to take us as we are and to make us useful in his kingdom. That's how God was with Nehemiah. In the previous chapter, we heard how Nehemiah acted when he heard about the state of Jerusalem. He wept, he prayed, he fasted, and then he planned. Then he acted. He got on with it. I read this story. I'll just read you a little excerpt from Christianity, the January edition. This is from church leader Jeff Lucas. We don't normally treat visitors with much suspicion, but Ken was a portrait of menace, dressed totally in black, his arms and face covered with crude self-inflicted tattoos. His studded trench coat made him look like a goth vampire. As an angry drug abuser, he had spent more than half his life in jail. He was infamous in the community, his firm face permanently twisted into a snarl. He only came to the service because someone dared him to attend. "You're so horrible, you should try church," they'd said. Hardly a warm evangelistic strategy, but it worked. I'll jump a bit. But then little Marge Sample showed up, silver-haired, elderly, and with a smile that could light up a room. Diminutive Marge was on duty as a member of the welcome team that morning. She boldly strolled over to where Ken was sitting, his arms folded defiantly. "Hello," she chirped. "I'm Marge. I don't believe we've met." She rested her hand lightly on his studded shoulder. Marge was somewhat taken aback by Ken's immediate violent response. Burying his head in his hands, he suddenly exploded into loud wailing. Ken sobbed his way into the kingdom that day. It wasn't much. She didn't do very much, but she was the right person at the right time. She was just doing what God called her to do. It doesn't always have to be that scary, nor have that exact outcome either. But you get the point. Marge remained true to herself and her gifts, but she just used them in the service of God and, of course, in the service of Ken. Every now and then, or perhaps a little bit more often than that, we need to give ourselves a sort of a health check about the action that we take with our lives. We can easily imagine that the broken vessels of our lives cannot be of use to the mighty God of all creation. But even though we may not feel that we are mended, we're good enough. We're useful enough. The cracks may show, they may still show a bit, you know. We're not perfect, are we? Well, I've certainly noticed that I'm not. But even in that, we can glory in the mercy of the work of God that's gone on in our lives, because we've been set free for his service. The Saviour God can take our failure and our weakness and use it for his glory, so that his life seems to be seen in us, despite our imperfections, despite our failures. For like Nehemiah, we have that personal relationship with God. We can call him my God, our Father, Abba. All this is because of God's absolutely amazing grace. Not because of our goodness or our learnedness or our natural gifts. With Nehemiah, the Lord put him in a place of privilege and of danger to be a servant, to restore the gates and walls, to use his natural gifts for careful planning along with his prayer, and then dare to stand before the king without a smile on his face, to take the risk, to exercise faith, and then to act. That's what we need, faith. As the band begins to play this song, Broken Vessels, let's all consider just how, despite our brokenness, we can step out in faith and do the jobs that God calls us to do. Because we're all called. Nobody is an exception. We all have the gifts. When you get to the chorus, if you remember, let's sing our redeemed status. Perhaps rather than singing that saved a wretch like me, let's sing that saved a child like me, because we're God's children, prepared by him, readied by him for his service. We're all his adopted children now. So sing, sit, stand. Let's worship the Lord in this song and commit ourselves in our broken state to act for him.